This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and as I look at the calendar, it is Wednesday, which means Wednesdays with Wes. And, you know, Wes, I want to start the show by going in depth on why Notre Dame is not playing in a bowl game. Just kidding. We're done. No more talk about Notre Dame.
We haven't exhausted that topic, right?
It's a betting podcast. We were thinking about playing Pete Bavakwa's entire press conference from yesterday, the AD of Notre Dame. But you know what? There's a team in that state that is the true football team of that state for the first time maybe ever, and that would be the Indiana Hoosiers, number one in all the land, Big Ten champions for the first time since 1967, Rose Bowl bound for the first time since 67. Wes, you were there, and I can only imagine, you know, once again, this is a betting podcast, but we're all sports fans, and your life is, you've been an Indiana guy, you went to Indiana, you've seen highs and lows of the basketball program, but nothing like this for the football program. What was the scene like inside Lucas Oil Stadium on Saturday night?
Yeah, 1967, a long time. Way back in 67, I was the dandy of Gamma Chi, just like Steely Dan would sing in Hey 19. But, you know, a surreal scene, Tim, obviously, to experience something like that, the biggest win in the program's history. And, you know, seeing all the red, all the scarlet and gray kind of file out of the stadium, and nobody from Indiana was leaving. And nobody was beating the traffic on Saturday night. No one was in a rush to get out into that cold on that Saturday winter night in Indianapolis, because we all wanted to see our team on the stage and, you know, wanted to see them like, is this real? Did this really just happen? We're all taking screenshots of the scoreboard and of the Trons there, the screens at Lucas Oil Stadium. And we're like, man, this just happened. Like we just won. And the fact that Indiana was the better team in the game, they were just a little bit better than Ohio State. Period. Like, they ran the ball better. They got to their quarterback more than Ohio State got to Mendoza. They converted better on third and fourth down. I think it was 7 of 14 versus 4 of 12. And then Fernando Mendoza, what can you say? Every single time this year in a close game, and we talked about that on the podcast last week, in a close game, who do you trust a little bit more? Do you trust Mendoza or do you trust Julian Sayin? And Mendoza, that throw to Charlie B from Nashville, Tennessee, just was tremendous, you know, to see that. And the fact that they went for it, you know, they're like, we're not going to play not to lose. We're going to play to win here. You know, you risk Ohio State getting the ball back one more time. And it's like, how many chances can you give these guys? But the defense kept coming up with stop after stop. And, you know, the fact that Indiana, it was a horse of a different color from last year, because it's been well documented how Indiana, when they went in the playoff, they weren't ready for Notre Dame. And they weren't ready in the regular season for Ohio State. And where you really saw it was in the trenches on the offensive and defensive line. This year, totally different. And we broke that down last week because we knew that the numbers were pretty even in terms of the regular stats, in terms of the advanced stats provided by Parker Fleming. But we knew the difference between this Indiana team than last year was they were better on the offensive and defensive line. And they were. They stood right up to Ohio State. And in fact, I thought they were better than Ohio State on both of the sides of the line of scrimmage. And that's what really won them the game. And it's a brave new world now. Indiana, number one in the country, Big Ten champions, going to the Rose Bowl for the first time since 1967. This isn't Wes making the trip to Pasadena to watch them play UCLA. Like, this is the real Rose Bowl. This is like the real deal here, you know, that they're going to get. And they're going to get either Alabama or Oklahoma. So, you know, couldn't have gone better. And the fact that Indiana won one of those grinder games, you know, it wasn't a shootout and we didn't think it was going to be, that they won a tough, close game against the best college football program in the country, in my opinion, at least in recent years, Ohio State. So, you know, we'll see. And everybody, by the way, that's saying that game didn't matter, I don't know. I saw a pretty dejected bunch of Ohio State guys going off the field.
No, it
that
mattered.
Game didn't matter. They didn't jake the game like, oh, well, this is better for our seed and all that happy horse bleep. No, no, it was not. You know, they wanted that Big Ten title bad because they hadn't won one since 2020. So it'd been a few years. So they wanted it bad. Indiana was just a little bit better. Just admit that. And let's see if they face off again, because that's a very realistic possibility.
It certainly is. And, you know, there are some props out there. I saw the Bear on with Gil earlier this week talking about a prop of Ohio State and Indiana versus the field. Look, there's nothing else you could say. Kirk Cignetti is a magic man. What he has done is unprecedented, to go to that program, which has been the doormat of the Big Ten for years. And not only to have the success last year, but to carry that over to what they've done this year. And, you know, you looked at the schedule. You had to go on the road to Oregon. They win that game. They were the better team. They had to go on the road to Penn State. I know it was a down Penn State team, but they were able to get that win. They had to go on the road to Iowa. Like, this schedule was so much more difficult this year than it was a year ago. And credit to them. And they were the rightful winner. And I don't know if I wouldn't be upset if we got it again. I don't know if we will get it again. You know, obviously, tests are out there. Maybe a rematch. Indiana faces Oregon in the semifinals. Maybe they face Texas Tech. It's funny, Wes. I was looking back because I do bowl games for a company called Bowl Season Radio. And 2 years ago, I did the Independence Bowl. It was Cal versus Texas Tech, Fernando Mendoza versus Texas Tech, and now both are top four teams. It's just crazy how college football has played out over these past couple of years. Let me ask you this, and this is the only time in this podcast, I promise, we will mention Notre Dame, because on Saturday night, I went to bed, Wes, and I was feeling pretty good. And we told the story about the happiness hedge and all of that, because I thought, based off of how Alabama had lost, that Notre Dame would be the 9 seed headed to Oklahoma, Alabama with the 10 seed. Obviously, that didn't play out. But as an Indiana fan, let me ask you this. Would you have preferred to have revenge in the Rose Bowl against the Irish, or would you prefer what you have now, which is, in theory, a lesser team in Oklahoma or Alabama?
You know, we were talking about that actually leaving the stadium on Saturday night, like, because I was thinking, okay, it's probably going to be Notre Dame, Alabama, or it's going to be Notre Dame, Oklahoma in the 8-9, and the winner goes to face Indiana in the Rose Bowl. And there was a part of me that was like, you know what? I want Notre Dame because I want to beat these guys, you know, and you want to get that revenge. But there's a part of me is like, Notre Dame, I think, is one of the few teams of the 12 that legitimately could win the thing based on how they were playing. Like, we had that discussion, Tim. They passed the eye test, but maybe not the resume test. Yeah. Like, when you look, because they lost their two biggest games, which were against Miami and Texas A&M, both teams, of course, in the CFP. So there was a part of me that wanted Notre Dame. And then there was a part of me, it's like, you know what? But I think Oklahoma or Alabama, not that it will be easy. It will not be, because this is a different kind of ball game. There's a different kind of pressure now. But I would fear them less than I would fear Notre Dame, based on how they were playing, based on what we saw from Alabama on Saturday afternoon in the SEC title game against Georgia, where I felt they got pretty much dominated. And then Oklahoma, we know they've had some issues offensively, and they've been off now for a few weeks, and they're certainly in those low-scoring games. Well, Indiana just proved that they can win a low-scoring game against an elite defense that was the number one defense, still is, in the country. So if they can do that with Ohio State, they can do that with Oklahoma. So there's a part of me that's relieved, and then there's a part of me that's like, I remember feeling how low we felt leaving Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend, like, yeah, Indiana, they really didn't belong, you know, and I remember that sentiment from Irish fans. So there's a part of me, it's like, let's get these guys back, but it's not to be, and it'll be Crimson versus Crimson in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, let's get to the early matchups and your early thoughts of the four games. We talked about them briefly on Monday. I have put in a couple bets. We'll try to do kind of a rolling document. I know a lot of these are moving. I did lay 21 with Oregon against James Madison on that Saturday night game. Number back out to 21.5. I think it got as low as 20 or 20.5. So I didn't get the best of the number, but it's moving back in that direction. But I want to start with Oklahoma, Alabama, because we saw this game already. It was in the middle of November. It's been much discussed, right? When we were talking about who deserves to get in. You know, personally, outside of my fandom, I didn't really want to see Oklahoma in the playoff just because I didn't feel like they were playing great football offensively. Defensively, there's no doubt they're an elite defense, but they were able to grind out wins against Missouri, grind out a win against LSU. What do you make of the rematch now in Norman? It was in Tuscaloosa in the middle of November, a game in which Alabama had a 95% postgame win expectancy, but lost the game 23-21. Any early thoughts on the first playoff game next Friday night?
Yeah, pretty even game, Tim. Like what we were talking about last week, how the numbers with Indiana and Ohio State were so even. They're very even here, I think, with these two teams. You know, got probably fortunate with our Sooner bets a couple weeks ago as they won the turnover battle, but almost got doubled in yardage by the Crimson Tide. And I think the line is kind of bearing that out, the fact that it's Pick'em or Alabama minus one. It's always one of those things, kind of like the NCAA tournament, where the team that everybody thinks should not be in,
I know,
they're always dangerous, yeah, especially in that first game. And I think Alabama is very, very dangerous here because they were the team, quite frankly, that I didn't think should have been in, that did get in. And we kind of saw the handwriting on the wall that they were a little bit protected based on the penultimate rankings before the final rankings came out Sunday. We felt that Alabama was like very much protected here, and they certainly were, and they get beat 28-7. But, you know, now they've got a little bit of motivation here, not only the revenge against the Sooners, but the fact that people don't think that they should be in. And I think that their offense is a little bit more dynamic, certainly, than Oklahoma's is. And Oklahoma's defense is a little bit better. But can they get the running game going is what I want to see out of Alabama, because they've been very hit or miss in terms of the running game this year. Now, how much you're going to be able to run on Brent Venables and his guys, you know, it's not going to be a lot, certainly, but you got to do enough, I think, to keep them honest. And then just the way Alabama, I think the term was leaking oil that everybody used about these guys, that they kind of were leaking a little bit of oil. Remember, Ryan Williams did not even have a target. Yep. I don't believe in the in the game against Auburn. And then Saturday, I'll admit, because we were pre-gaming, I did not watch a lot of this game. I would see the corner of the eye and just see the score. So I haven't like broken down anything necessarily, but got to find a way to get your best receiver the football. He had two catches for 33 yards on Saturday against Georgia. So initial lean, Tim, would be Alabama. But I don't even know if I'm going to have a bet on this game. We shall see. Obviously, these are going to move, and we're not going to have a lot of opt-outs, certainly, but I think amongst these playoff teams. We'll get to that in a moment. But I would lean Alabama here, even though they got to go on the road to Norman.
Yeah, I did make a small play on Alabama. We'll dive into it more, obviously, next week. But it is funny you mentioned it. And I know it's not scientific or statistical, but it is kind of that thought of, you know, think back to last week, whether you believe it or not, when you think about Duke, right? Duke is a team that has no business being in the ACC championship game. So, of course, they're going to win the ACC championship game, and they did in overtime. Similarly to last year, you know, the whole discussion leading up to Ohio State, Tennessee was, is Ryan Day going to be fired? You know, they can't get over the hump and all of this. And then they go out, and of course, we remember roll and win the national championship. So, yeah, that game on Friday night, next Friday night, I do like Alabama a little bit there on the road at Oklahoma. And then we get three games on Saturday, as we all know, next Saturday. Let's start with Miami, Texas A&M. We've seen a little bit of movement here in this contest. Of the four, I think this is the one that I'm most intrigued by. You know, we got two rematches. We've got a G5 team going out to Autzen and James Madison. Miami, Texas A&M. You know, Miami, and I said it on Monday, I give them credit because when the initial rankings came out, Wes, they weren't playing well, right? They had lost 2 of 3. That's why they popped at number 18 when the first rankings came out. But they turned it back on. And against Pittsburgh, they probably played their best game of the season. Maybe USF, I don't know, however you want to split hairs, but one of their best games of the season. They look like September Miami. Can they carry that over to Texas A&M? Hostile environment, Kyle Field. That place is going to be jumping. And Texas A&M, they ended the regular season West, obviously, with a bitter taste in their mouth as they lose to their arch rival Texas. They ruin their perfect regular season, ruin an opportunity to win the SEC, but the big goals are still out there. Right now, we'll call it 3.5. Circa's sitting at 3 juiced right now, 51.5. I've gone back and forth. Once again, we'll dive into these more in-depth next week, but early thoughts on Miami and Texas A&M.
Yeah, better defense, certainly, I think, for the Hurricanes, how they can get pressure on Marcel Reed and force him to turn it over. A&M certainly, I think, the better running game of the two. I've gone back and forth on this as well, because Miami, I think because people are going to look for the dark horse, right? Because they're going to look to say, well, maybe Ohio State isn't quite what they were. Indiana's never been in this situation before. Same with Texas Tech, you know. So they're going to want to fade maybe the top four. So I think a lot of people are looking to Miami as a little bit of that sleeper this time around, because, you know, they got in. Yeah, but, you know, there was some doubt that they were going to get in, that they were going to need a lot of help. And, you know, the ACC obviously promoted their full-fledged member, which is the U here. So that was a little bit of controversy with that. But Miami is kind of like lying in the weeds here. And I think that there are people that are going to really like this team. And is Texas A&M out of sight, out of mind? Keep in mind, this team's only lost one game. But their one loss was the last game against Texas, where I thought that they were outplayed, and I thought Texas was the better side in the game. And it's still fresh that A&M was, what were they down to South Carolina, Tim? What were they down, like 30 to nothing?
30 to 3.
Yeah. And then scored the last 28 or however many to win that ball game and barely eke it out. So Texas A&M, I think, in the market is going to be perceived as a little bit of a weak favorite. And you're already seeing it. You're seeing 3. I know at Circa, it's 3 -120 right now on Gig'em. But I haven't decided what I want to do with this game. This is one I got to look at a little bit more, because I'm kind of going back and forth. I could make a case really for either side here.
By the way, I failed to mention it since we started the podcast with Wes. We will be doing the giveaway after we bid farewell to Wes. So 10 total giveaways. I've already emailed the winners. We'll talk about the process and all of that, but appreciate all the emails. cfbpod@vsin.com if you want to keep those rolling in. I'll lump these two together. Once again, Wes, we'll dive into these more in depth next week. Brett Ciancia is on a trip right now. He'll be back next week as well. So, you know, full-fledged preview of the playoff next week, but early thoughts on the two G5 teams getting in. You have a unique situation where Tulane and Ole Miss, they played already this year. It was a dominant win by Ole Miss. They went 45-10, but Lane Kiffin's not there, right? So what does that mean? Charlie Weiss Jr. did come back to coach during the bowl, or during the playoff run. So most of the staff for Pete Golding, who is now the head coach down there at Ole Miss, got promoted, is intact. And you also have a situation where John Summerall, he is going to be leaving as well. And then you've got James Madison in Oregon, 21.5-point spread, mostly 21.5s out there for this spot. I want to start with that game because I did bet it. And the more I've thought about it, you know, something I thought about, Wes, is Dan Lanning in the bully role, and Dan Lanning in the motivation opportunity, he really excels at it. And you think back to earlier this year, you had Mike Gundy talking smack, and they went out and they beat him 69-3. And I know it's Oklahoma State and they were a disaster this year, but it's not like James Madison's talking smack. But I do think, and I'm curious your thoughts on this as an Indiana fan and someone who follows the Big Ten as closely as you do, all the talk this year has been about Indiana and Ohio State, right? And it's, but Oregon played Indiana at home and they lost that game, right? A lot of us bet Washington in the final week of the season. They win that game. They win a grinder on the road against Iowa. And then you think back to the last time we saw Oregon in the playoff, and they got embarrassed. They were down 34-0 in the first half of the Rose Bowl to Ohio State. So I think they're by far a superior team. The point spread tells you that. And I think they're going to be out to prove something on that Saturday night. So I don't lay chalk all that much, but I did lay the chalk here in this spot with Oregon against JMU.
Yeah, and you look at on the JMU side, of course, Bob Chesney had his press conference in Westwood yesterday as he has taken over the UCLA program. So, and you're seeing the same thing also with John Summerall in the Tulane Ole Miss game. They're going to prepare. I don't think this is like, yeah, we don't give a damn about it. You know, you care about your players, and this is an opportunity for them and also an opportunity for you as a coach. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. But I think with Oregon, when I pointed out and when we talked briefly about Notre Dame earlier, I felt that there were about five or six teams that realistically could win it all. I saw two of them on Saturday in Indianapolis, Ohio State and Indiana. I think you've got to say Georgia can win the whole thing. I felt Notre Dame could win the whole thing. And I would say Texas Tech, too. And then the sixth team, because I felt there were six teams that could win it all, was Oregon. I think Oregon can absolutely win it all now. And I underestimated them this year. I thought they were going to be a little bit down. Now, the schedule was pretty permissible, and they lost to Indiana. But that was a tie game in the fourth quarter. Indiana, like we said, with the Big Ten championship game on Saturday, is just a little bit better, but not by a lot. They weren't a lot better against Oregon, and I think Oregon has been lying in the weeds a little bit, you know, just kind of waiting, and they might be out to prove something. They're a very dangerous five seed for whoever gets them deeper in the draw. So as much as I love James Madison and obviously the connection with Kurt Cignetti, like the JMU people are like, we got two teams in the playoff, actually. We got the Dukes and the Hoosiers, but man, this is going to be tough. They beat up on all this Sun Belt competition, but what really showed a little chink in the armor, number one, they really couldn't get away from Troy in that Sun Belt game. I know it was 17, but that was a little bit cosmetic. And they couldn't get away from Washington State when I thought that they were going to roll Washington State a couple weeks ago, and Washington State hung right there with them. So I think JMU's probably getting overwhelmed here.
Yeah, and you look at Oregon, too, and, you know, Oklahoma, Alabama, if you look at some of the advanced numbers, there's nothing fluky about their 11-1 season. Every single one of their wins, they had a post-game win expectancy of 94% or greater, except for the Penn State game. And despite winning that game in overtime, according to Bill Conley's SP+, they still had a 77% post-game win expectancy. So there's really nothing fluky about this whole year with Oregon. And will they get healthier? I know that was a big concern, right? Their injuries, DeCorian Moore, Gary Bryant Jr., two stud wide receivers. They showed their depth, too, down the stretch. I felt like Wes beating USC in the fashion that they did, grinding one out against Washington. So I agree. I did not bet their win total. A lot of people I respected did have some under Oregon. I did not bet their win total, but I was not a believer on this Oregon team. I bet against them in the Washington game, bet against them a couple times, and ultimately they proved me wrong. So I'm going to ride with them here in this spot. But as I mentioned, you know, more in-depth next week. We'll be game week next week. But I kind of wanted to talk a little bit, I don't want to say philosophical, but curious about bowl betting and how different it is nowadays with opt-outs. Now, the transfer portal doesn't open until early January, but you're still going to see players not play in some of these games. So, you know, these bowl games came out on Sunday. We saw some big line moves. Wes, what's kind of your mindset on how you bet bowl games nowadays? Do you bet them early and then wait until you find out all the information? Do you try to beat lines? Like, what's your kind of thought process going into betting bowl games in 2025?
It is a little bit of a mixed bag, Tim, because it used to be how you would handicap these bowl games is your default or your when in doubt was like, okay, who's more motivated to be right here? who's more happy to be here? Do you got a team that didn't make the playoff or lost their conference championship game and now they're in a little bit of a lower tier bowl? Like, I think one example of that, just to not give an aside here, but just pointing out an example, would be the New Mexico Bowl, where you've now got North Texas playing against San Diego State. Market moved against North Texas, and one of the reasons why, Eric Morris going to take the job at Oklahoma State. How many players are going to be going with him to Stillwater? How many people are thinking about that? Now that North Texas, they were one game away from the college football playoff, they get beat by Tulane on Friday night in the American Championship. So how motivated are they? So that would be like an example here. So you still have a little bit of the motivational angles, I think, in some of these games. But I don't overload my portfolio early. It used to be, okay, let's try to beat the numbers. We know where this is probably going to move, you know, when the sharp guy is going to take a crack at him, granted at lower limits. So we know, or we have an idea where these are going to move. So you want to get the best number, but we're going to have other things come out too. And it's not just the old school things where it's like, okay, who didn't make grades at semester? Yeah. Or okay, you know, who got in a bar fight over graduation weekend, or who got popped with, you know, underage drinking, or, you know, smoking a certain substance, or whatever it is, you know, who got in trouble? Who's going to get disciplinary? Where are the suspensions going to be? Well, now you have the opt-outs, I think, and we're very early in the process, so there's going to be a lot more. But like I noticed for Penn State, Zane Durant, he opts out, one of their best defenders. And you've already got kids, Rocco Spindler, the former Notre Dame lineman now at Nebraska. He put out something, I'm going into the NFL draft, and that's what they're going to focus on, and go into the Senior Bowl or whatever it is. They used to have the East-West Shrine game, but go into the games where the NFL scouts are going to be. So that's what they are focusing on right now and not wanting to risk injury in one of the middle to lower tier bowl games. So I think it's a balance here. I think some of these you have to get in early and some of these you have to wait. And what inevitably happened to me last year was there were a couple of games I did have to buy out of where I was like, you know what? You know, I'm on a horrible number. So then you got to make a decision. Do you buy out of it or do you stick with it? Some I stuck with and they won, and some I had to buy out of. So I think there's no real rush necessarily. Because some of these line moves are, by the way, not going to be accurate. Some of them are going to be wrong, or it's going to go one way. And then all of a sudden you get a, you know, starting quarterback and two of the top three receivers. Yeah, we're going to sit out. And then it plummets the other way. So what I would say is to maybe exercise at least a little bit of caution, not necessarily with the playoff games, because everybody, all hands on deck. No one's going to skip a playoff game when you got an opportunity to play a national championship. Yeah, he's going to skip, obviously, even though a lot of his offensive staff is coming back to Ole Miss, by the way, along with Charlie Weiss. So I think discretion, I guess, is the better part of valor, is what I would say here. You don't want to be too pot committed on some of these. And if you don't get right at the exact number where it's like, oh, man, I could have laid pick and now it's two or something. Or three, you know what? College is a lot more variance than it is in the NFL. Like in the NFL, every like half point is life, as you saw with the Raiders-Broncos game here in Las Vegas last Sunday. That actually went my way, so I was actually happy about that. Usually I'm on the other end of that. But nevertheless, I think that you have to have some discretion. You don't want to be overloaded necessarily here. So patience is a virtue, and I think it certainly is in bowl betting.
Yeah, you look at the service academy games involving Army and Navy, Air Force not bowl eligible. Those are the biggest movers that at least I noted, where Army opened up, I believe, at DraftKings 3.5-point underdog to UConn. They're now a 3-point favorite. And then Navy opened up around 6.5-point dog to Cincinnati, and they are now the betting favorite. And it's also worth noting this, too. The portal is open later, so you know, we may not see opt-outs for Saturday night's L.A. Bowl with Boise State and Washington, even though I would imagine Denzel Boston and Jonah Coleman will not play in that game. I don't know for sure. That would be my hunch for Washington in that one, Wes. But I would say the earlier bowl games may be a little bit truer to what those teams are supposed to look like
as opposed to maybe a game on January 2nd, Navy will be exactly who they are supposed to be in the Liberty Bowl. But is Cincinnati going to be who they're supposed to be? I would imagine Dante Corleone is not going to play in that game. Brendan Sorsby, certainly a big question regarding that. So keep an eye on all of that.
You also want to check your coaching changes, not just the head coach, but obviously the coordinators, the position coaches, because the position coaches really are the ones that are your recruiters, right? So they're the ones that bring the certain talent to campus, you know, to meet the coach and to meet the coordinator. So there's loyalty there with some of these players to a certain coach and not necessarily to your school that gave you the scholarship. So that's something you got to look up and you got to monitor not only the opt-outs, but also the coaching, you know, which assistants are going to certain places with the new coach, which ones are staying. So that's something that I think also matters in this whole deal.
Well, also, you know, if players say they're entering the portal, make sure that they're not playing in the game if you're betting against them, right? They can play in the game. They can say, hey, I'm going portaling and I'm not going to play in the game. You know, I did our buddy Will Hill's podcast, You Gotta Bet More. And he asked me a question I thought was a really good one, so I'm gonna ask it to you. He said, of the bowl games right now, and I recorded with him on Tuesday, he said, which one do you think moves the most? And I have an answer, and I'm curious which one it will be your. I'm going to give you a little bit of time since I'm throwing it to you. The one I think that could move the most is the game you alluded to, the New Mexico Bowl, because you've got North Texas, who on paper should be probably a bigger favorite than they are against San Diego State. My hunch is, Wes, this is hanging in limbo because of the uncertainty regarding that roster, right? You mentioned it. Eric Morris is gone. He's gone to Oklahoma State. They brought in Neil Brown. He's not going to coach, but Neil Brown will be the new head coach down there at North Texas, the former West Virginia coach. I got to imagine Drew Mestemaker is not going to play, but it is not official. So I assume that's why we're kind of hanging out, because if he does play, then North Texas minus -3, 3.5 is a big bet, right? People are going to want to bet North Texas against a San Diego State team that offensively is a bit challenged. But if he doesn't play, how big is that drop off from him to the backup? And does that lead to more players opting out? So to me, North Texas and San Diego State on December 27th in the New Mexico Bowl, West, has the possibility of flipping significantly, but we haven't really seen it have that big move yet because we don't know for sure if Mestemaker and others will opt out to go portaling, because once again, the portal doesn't officially open until January 2nd. I did take a small position on San Diego State, 3.5, just in case that does happen. But to your point, if he does play, I'm probably going to have to figure out a way to get off that bet because North Texas is more than likely the right side.
Right. And that would certainly be one of my candidates. I got a couple here. The Alamo Bowl. And it could really go either way. And by the way, that is USC and TCU. On the USC side, I'm assuming Mekhi Lemon, he's first round pick, that he's not going to play. But you could get Jaden Maiava sit. You could get Jacoby Lane sit. You could get a lot of defensive guys sitting for USC. And then on the TCU side, remember what I just talked about with the coordinators. Kendall Briles is taking the OC job at South Carolina. Is quarterback Josh Hoover going to follow him there? Because Josh Hoover's brother actually does play baseball there for the Gamecocks at South Carolina. So might you see that? So that could be really a two-way issue when I was looking at the, you know, some of the portal stuff. Arizona State, Duke, how much is that going to move? That's moved a little bit. Sam Levitt looks like he is not going to be in Porter. Kenny Dillingham, by the way, you know, came out and said, no, if you're going to play, you're going to be here. You know, guys in the portal that they're not going to play. And now you got a Duke team that did get left out, even though they won the ACC title game with the 8-5 record. So you get maybe a motivated team there in the Sun Bowl against Arizona State. I think that certainly could be a mover more towards the Duke area. But those were two that really stood out to me. And some of these moves, too, that are early doesn't necessarily mean they're the right moves. We'll see if that one in the ReliaQuest Bowl is with Iowa and Vanderbilt. Well, now you have Vanderbilt out to 6, where we believe believe that Diego Pavia is going to sit finish second in the Heisman voting. I certainly do. I think Fernando Mendoza.
He better, right?
Yeah, I think he's going to win the award, but I don't think it's a, despite what the market says, I don't know that it's a foregone conclusion necessarily, because there is a lot of support for Diego Pavia, but I think Mendoza in the clutch moments has proven that he should win. But, you know, now if he doesn't, do you get a motivated Vanderbilt team in that ReliaQuest Bowl and against an Iowa team that tough defense, you know, not a lot of points going to be scored in that game. So that is a very interesting one, I think, to kick off New Year's Eve.
Yeah. And I just wanted to mention this. I wrote it up for the guide. I ended up betting. So a couple of the early bets that I put in, we talked about it. No surprise here for those of you who know me and listen to this podcast all year. I took Hawaii +3 early in the process. I actually took a three and a half juiced. I beg your pardon. That number's come down a little bit. But Wes, I bet Army on the money line yesterday. Stations Casino here in Vegas was -$1.40. DraftKings -142. I think that's still palatable. I look at this UConn team, and you know, it's funny because last year, Wes, UConn was a very much bet on team for me in the bowl season. They were playing in the Fenway Bowl. They played North Carolina, who, as we've discussed, coaching change, obviously, last offseason with Belichick and all of that. And they went out and they won the game 27-14 as a slight underdog. Now, think about how different the circumstances are for UConn. Last year, they played in the Fenway Bowl. It was a big time opportunity. You're playing an ACC team. This year, you're playing an Army team. You're back in the Fenway Bowl. Your coach left. And I also would imagine Skylar Bell,
yeah,
who is a stud wide receiver, he was second in the country in receptions, second in the country in receiving yards, second in the country in touchdowns. He's already accepted an invitation to the Senior Bowl. He's a legit pro prospect. He's not playing in this game. Like,
no.
They would be stunning if he does. Now, Joey Fagnano, I can't imagine he has pro prospects. I would imagine he plays in this game. I think he's a New England guy. He started his career in Maine, but Army, I looked it up. Jeff Monken is 5-1. In bowl games at Army, and the only loss that he had, Wes, was during the COVID season. They went to the Liberty Bowl and they played a decent West Virginia team. They were a 10-point dog and lost by 3. So on the money line, Army for me, and then Navy, I haven't gotten there yet. That number's going crazy, but you know, betting on these armed service academies, usually is a profitable endeavor in bowl season.
Yeah, and the market is moving to Navy, I think, at number one because of what you just said and because of the motivation with the service academies that they've been good bets. But also, Brendan Sorsby is the quarterback for Cincinnati going to go. He was pretty noncommittal when they asked him about it, which I don't know how much of a positive omen that is for the Bearcats necessarily. So that is the Liberty Bowl, by the way, on January 2nd, Navy 2.5-3 right now. I would still think that'd be, even though that's been a big move, that would probably be a little bit worth it on the money line. But I think the academies are good bets. And then finding those motivated teams. You and I lined up in the Rate Bowl on New Mexico,
yep,
getting a field goal or more against Minnesota, despite the fact PJ Fleck is 6-0 in bowls. New Mexico felt like they should have been in the Mountain West Championship game, and I felt they should have been in the Mountain West Championship game, and they probably thought they were when they won that overtime game against San Diego State. So this is their chance now to get a Big Ten team. You get those group of fives, I think, against, you know, Big Ten, Big 12, SEC, ACC. Those aren't going to be bad bets. I think you're going to see motivation out of those teams.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, the opportunity, because it felt like, based off of all the projections, New Mexico would just play in the New Mexico Bowl. And I was like, oh, it's kind of unfortunate for them. It's not, you know, it's not the same situation like Hawaii, who wants to play in the Hawaii Bowl, right? So, I think them getting to play in Phoenix against a P4 team, I think certainly is very much motivating for New Mexico. And Jason Eck is going to be staying, right? He's not going anywhere. So that certainly adds.
That's another good point, too, because we've seen that movement with BYU, with Kalani Sitake, withdrew from the Penn State sweepstakes that ended up landing Matt Campbell, which may end up being a great hire, by the way, by Pat Kraft there in State College. But Sitake staying at BYU, I'm sure there's a lot of the players are like, man, coach is staying, awesome. And you're seeing a little bit of movement with BYU against Georgia Tech in that Pop-Tart Bowl.
Yep. All right, Wes, we'll do it again next week. We'll dive deep into the four playoff games. And good news, you don't have to worry about those four playoff games because you could sit back and get ready to go to Pasadena on New Year's Day. Think about that, Wes. Your beloved Indiana Hoosiers in the Rose Bowl. Doesn't get much better than that, does it?
In the Rose Bowl, man. You know, people saying the one versus two didn't matter. Mattered a hell of a lot to me, Tim, and my fellow Indiana Hoosier alum and fan and brethren, to win the first outright title since 1945, since effing World War II, as Pat McAfee said when he was firing back at Ichabod Crane there, Paul Feinbaum.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Wes, appreciate it. Happy for you, my friend, and we'll talk next week.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to give out our giveaways as well as take a look back a little bit at how we fared on our win totals and preseason futures bets. We'll do that next. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. We'll get to the winners here in just a second. A couple of emails I wanted to read as well. But our giveaways were courtesy of our friends over at Rainbow Authentics. As you know, they have been a part of this podcast all year long. You always see me rocking the hat. A couple of you guys will be getting Rainbow Authentics hats here in just a moment, but they've got a new line that they're promoting right now, and it's for Kansei Matsuzawa, the Tokyo Toe, the Hawaii kicker who is the Lou Groza Award finalist, and you can rep some of his great gear right now, TokyoToe.com. Premium sportswear for fans who love the game, TokyoToe.com, where precision meets passion. And Timmy Chang, by the way, scheduled to jump on the podcast on Thursday. So looking forward to chatting with Timmy Chang here on Thursday on the podcast. All right, a couple things before we get out of here. I know it's a unique week. Army-Navy on Saturday. I love Army-Navy. I've been to it once when I was living in Maryland, went to the game with my father, and then I was on the broadcast team, wasn't on site for those 3 years. Actually, maybe that was the reason Navy ultimately didn't want me on the broadcast team anymore, because I was 0-3 when I was on the broadcast team. And I believe the first year was the end of like an 11-game winning streak for Navy against Army. But always a great game. I'll give us some thoughts on Thursday's pod on Army-Navy as well. And just a reminder, the College Football Tailgate Show, Saturday, we will talk a lot of Army and Navy, of course, on that one as well. But let's get to the winners. And Mike Ramsey is our winner for the signed helmet. And I love the confidence because Mike, when he emailed us, cfbpod@vsin.com, he said, let me know if you want my address now or when I win. Hey, shooters got to shoot. And when I put all these names into the random generator, I think like 150, 160 of you guys emailed me for the swag. So pretty awesome to see the pouring in into the email address, but much appreciated. And congrats to Mike Ramsey, the winner of the signed helmet. Congrats to Don. He won the unsigned helmet. Edwin and Tyler won some hats. Brandon, David, Brian, Peter, Chris, and Ryan all won t-shirts as well. I've emailed all of them, and appreciate all of you for emailing me. Let's keep the email going. Why not? cfbpod@vsin.com. I'll try to remind you guys of that email. If you've got some questions, feel free to fire away, especially as we venture into the off season. I'm going to try to keep this podcast rolling throughout the off season. You know, it won't be as frequent, but we want to keep the feed as available as possible. And this email from Cameron made me laugh. He said, hey, wanted to take the opportunity to send some support to the show. Huge fan of the show, everything you've done with it. Been a listener for 3 years now, and this has become a weekly tradition. I love the off-season work you do as well to get us through the dog days. Huge shout out to you, Matt, Wes, Adam, Brett, and all the off-season guests for always delivering. And now with Notre Dame possibly being left out of the playoffs. Well, they have been left out of the playoffs. Maybe I'll get a break from the drinking game for a bit. Let's close the year out strong. Go Dogs. Thanks to Cameron. Yes, the drinking game that we played all throughout the offseason. Every time I mention Notre Dame, you have to drink. So appreciate that one there. I'll give you one more email, which made me feel pretty good regarding someone driving around cutting the lawn and enjoying listening to us. So, you know, appreciate all of you guys for all of the support. Let's keep the emails coming through at cfbpod@vsin.com. So much appreciated. Ryan on the email said, "Hey, sorry what happened to Notre Dame. Ironically, I bet Miami in on Sunday because I thought the committee would set a precedent and drop Bama for their no-show. The math was bad, but the answer was still correct. Just glad the teacher didn't ask me to show my work." Yes. Congrats on hitting that. We talked about the happiness hedge a little bit there as well. All right. So congrats to all the winners. Maybe we'll do some more giveaways if we can get some more swag to send to you guys. But keep firing away the emails. We'll keep it up and running throughout the offseason, certainly throughout the bowl season, if you guys have thoughts, and we will run through it. Just a reminder, by the way, on Thursday, we will have our bowl betting guide, or actually, I think it's more of the college football guide that will be available out there. So if you want to get your hands on that, vsin.com/subscribe. One thing I wanted to do before getting out of here, and I felt like today was a decent day to do it. You know, we like to be transparent. We always put our records on our best bets. I'll be honest, my best bet record ain't too great this year. 46, 44, and 4. I think actually it's 47. 44 and 4 because I did in week one give out Alabama to make the playoff, which once again, you know, I'm so conflicted when you think about how it all played out. I'm like, damn, I wish I had missed that bet because that would have maybe meant Notre Dame was in. But we did bring that bet home. But I wanted to run through the win totals, the dates we gave them out, and just, you know, try to be as transparent as possible. First bet we made this offseason, May 18th, Clemson to win the ACC, plus 140. How'd that work out? Not so awesome. Got great closing line value, though, didn't we? May 18th, Clemson to win the ACC. All right. Did not get that one home. May 28th, we got a great number. Notre Dame to win the title, 30-1 at the Westgate Superbook. How'd that work out? Not so great. They made the playoff? Maybe, but guess what happened? I think you know by now, they did not make the payoff. How about May 31st? We took a long shot to win the Heisman. Devin Dampier to win the Heisman. Well, Fernando Mendoza, Diego Pavia, Jeremiah Love, Julian Sayin. Those are the four gentlemen who will be in New York City on Saturday. Did not get that one home. Hey, did you win anything this offseason? We're getting there. All right, it took us a month, but we started getting some win totals. Wisconsin under 5.5 wins at Circa, minus $1.40. Winner, Wisconsin 4-8 on the year. So 1-0 on win totals. Same day, June 26th, we bet an over. Nebraska, 7.5. Guess what Nebraska didn't do? Get to 7.5 wins. They finished with 7. The injury to Dylan Raiola did not help us out. I still remember the day that Matt Newman's reminded me that Nebraska has not gone over their win total, I believe now 9 straight seasons, 9 or 10. Never again, Nebraska, we're not going over that win total. July 2nd, Hawaii on the money line against Stanford. We went with a week 0 game, winner, winner. Thank you to the Tokyo Toe for 3 field goals in that one, plus 110 at DraftKings. That was the game that I was on vacation with my family in Delaware, and I was on the Rehoboth Beach Boardwalk, and right outside Funland, for those who know, and a gentleman said, "Hey, thanks for the Hawaii bet." I'm like, whoa, game hasn't happened yet, man, but we got there. All right, July 8th, Syracuse under 5.5, winner, winner. You know, when you have to turn your attention to a lacrosse player playing quarterback, probably going to work out well. If Steve Angeli doesn't tears ACL. Do we win this bet? I don't know. They beat Clemson, and that was not a great day in early September for me, but then he got injured, and it ultimately played out 3-9 for Syracuse. All right, July 8th as well. We had a bunch of people love Southern Miss over 4.5 wins. I want to say it was Josh Nunn of Action Network, Colby Dant of SGP, and we said, all right, let's do it. Let's jump in on Southern Miss over 4.5 wins. Southern Miss gets there. 7 wins. Another winner. All right, good job. Let's get back to some losers. July 14th, Utah to win the Big 12, 6-1 at DraftKings. Remember early on in the year when it looked like Utah was going to maybe run away with the Big 12? They were down to like, I want to say like 2-1, plus 150, something like that. Well, they didn't get there. Texas Tech's your winner. And that, unfortunately, didn't get us there. This one might have been the worst bet of the whole offseason. San Jose State to reach the Mountain West Championship. Man, this was right around the time of Mountain West Media Day, so we were getting into it. We had Coach Kenny Amatalolo, who I still adore. I think he's a good coach despite what unfolded this year. Walker Egitt, they got the spread and tread offense, plus 220 to reach the Mountain West Championship. Nope, they're not even bowl eligible this year. Staying in the Mountain West, staying with our Bows. The Bows made us a lot of money this year. Over 5.5 wins, laid the juice on that. They get the 8 wins. Boise State to win the Mountain West. This one was not an easy one to get home, but we got there. Minus 125. Certainly didn't look like we'd get there. 4-way tiebreaker goes our way after the regular season. Boise State plays UNLV, gets it at home. They win the game convincingly. Boise State wins the conference. Army under 7.5 wins. What a roller coaster this one was. They finish up with 6 wins. They obviously have one more regular season game to go against Navy. But you look at Army, shout out to, I want to say, Wes and Todd Furman, who really liked the Army under this year. And we tailed that one. Army loses the season opener to Tarleton State. They played an FCS team and they lost. And we're like, all right, giddy up. This is going to be an easy winner. And then they went to Kansas State in week 2 and beat Kansas State. Like, what the hell's going on? They almost came back and beat North Texas. They lose that game. They get smoked by East Carolina. We're feeling decent. They lose to Tulane, a scary one there. But the one that got us over was Tulsa. Tulsa came back and beat Army, so we were able to get there on the Army under bet. That one comes home. Notre Dame, Miami under 53.5. It's funny, when you think back to the start of the season, well, how important did this game end up being, right? But Notre Dame, Miami, I thought coming into the year that Notre Dame's strength would be defense. Well, early on in the season, it was anything but defense, and we saw the week 3 game against A&M. A best bet for me on this podcast was over in the A&M Notre Dame game, and it hit by halftime, but I played under on August 9th. The market, if I remember correctly, I think it moved to like 50 and it landed 51. So we were fortunate enough to get it in there. August 11th, we went with North Texas. This might have been the easiest one. North Texas over 6.5 wins. They had 11. Liberty to win the Sun Belt. That one did not get there. I blame Adam Burke for that one. Thank you, Adam. No, I'm just kidding. August 11th, Liberty to win the Sun Belt. They were a disaster this year. Didn't even get bowl eligible. We took some long shots. The long shots didn't work out this year. August 12th, Washington to make the college football playoff plus 950. Did not get there. August 13th, Alabama to make the playoff. That did get there. Got a little squirrely at the end, but did get there. And lastly, August 19th, Florida under 7.5 wins. That one gets there. So win totals in the preseason went 7-1. That was good. Futures, not so good. We hit Alabama to make the playoff. We hit, we also hit the Boise to win the Mountain West, but the long shots all failed to get us there. And we did go 2-0
in our game bets in the summer. So I wanted to recap it. I like to be transparent with you guys. 46, 44, and 4 in the regular season. But we got bowl season, so there you go. The rolling bowl bets, by the way, that we have so far in off of this podcast, we took 3.5 with Hawaii. I believe we mentioned that on Monday. Took 3.5 with New Mexico against Minnesota. I am in on Army money line as well. Army minus 142 is out there at DraftKings right now against UConn. So we'll kind of have a rolling type of best bets for you guys through this. And oh, by the way, 2 playoff bets. I did take a little on Alabama pick'em as well as Oregon laying the 21. All right. That is going to do it for the podcast. Thanks again to you guys. Hopefully you enjoyed the giveaways, and I will send these out here shortly to the 10 winners. Please continue to email us if you'd like, cfbpod@vsin.com, and do continue to give us some 5-star reviews. I did get one email sending a screenshot that we were their number one viewed or my number one listened to Spotify, which was pretty cool. So let me give a shout out to that one, because that was pretty neat to see the Spotify numbers that a lot of people. Austin, he has listened to 2,900 minutes of the VSIN College Football podcast on Spotify. So shout out to you, Austin. Much appreciated for being a loyal listener there on Spotify. We'll be back on Thursday. Matt Eumanns, Timmy Chang, the head coach of Hawaii, also scheduled to jump on the podcast. So looking forward to that. We got plenty to get to. We're not going anywhere throughout the rest of the bowl season and the college football playoffs. So stay tuned to the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. Thanks to Wyatt. Thanks to Ryan, our 2 producers of this podcast. I'm Tim Murray, back on Thursday with another episode of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.